This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Christopher Lane is a research professor at Northwestern University. His most recent book is Shyness: How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness. You can check him out online at christopherlane.org. It's an honor to welcome back to this program, Chris Lane. How are you, sir?
I'm really good. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. I've been looking forward to it. We have a lot we want to talk about.
Sure.
Why don't we start first with your recent interview, which was posted at psychologytoday.com with Philip Dawdy. Tell us first who this is and then what you learned from talking to him.
Right. Philip Dawdy is a prize-winning investigative journalist. He's someone who runs a fantastic website called Furious Seasons, furiousseasons.com. One of the things he does is daily report on the drug companies and their practices and debates in American psychiatry over medications and their side effects. And so I had a number of very particular questions to ask him about ADHD and bipolar disorder. In particular, I wanted to know why so many more boys than young girls are being diagnosed with ADHD and what that says about our culture and our expectations on boys, and particularly maybe changes in teaching policy and so on.
We're talking with Chris Lane. He blogs at psychologytoday.com. His most recent book is Shyness. So what did Philip have to say?
Well, one of the key things which is very memorable is that the difference between male and female diagnosis is 3 to 1, which is to say three times more likely as a boy to be diagnosed with ADHD than a young girl. It's not to say that the problem hasn't been recognized in girls, but I think that tells us a fair amount about a problem when we're seeing 1 million children being treated with behavior-modifying medications, and that the age of where treatment is starting is getting younger and younger. Where many of these problems several years ago simply were not understood to exist as such, or were thought about in a completely different way, largely through were treated through psychotherapy and talk-related treatments. And now we've got to a point where sometimes 2 and 3-year-olds are being medicated with quite serious drugs, Seroquel, Zyprexa, these off-label treatments, where the drugs have not been properly tested on children. The FDA is extremely leery of this practice, and yet it's going on in greater and greater numbers.
Christopher Lane is my guest, christopherlane.org. This is truly frightening. This is scary. 2 and 3-year-olds being diagnosed bipolar and giving psychotic meds. It's just amazing.
Well, the rates of diagnosis have shot up by 4,000%, which is absolutely eye-popping when you think about it. And yes, I mean, one of the huge problems here is how you determine that a 1-year-old or a 2-year-old is exhibiting a full-blown mental disorder. I mean, it's one thing to identify traits and patterns and say, there's possibly cause for concern. It's another thing to move to medication at such an incredible young age in light of the lasting permanent damage that one could do to a young brain and young body. And at the same time, it's working on the presumption that trait will later balloon into a full-blown disorder. And there's very, very sketchy evidence on this. So on so many counts, I think there are serious grounds for concern here, and yet it's like a juggernaut, that no one can stop, and it just simply to point this out, I think is beginning. The St. Petersburg Times in Florida recently reported that in 2007, 23 infants less than 1 year old were treated with antipsychotics. It's absolutely mind-boggling.
Chris, you have to repeat that and say that again.
In the year 2007, 23 infants less than 1 year old were given antipsychotics.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, less than 1 year old.
So this is clearly I don't know what point we get when we stand up as a nation and say the pharmaceutical companies have gone too far. But when you have infants being given, you know, diagnosed bipolar and being given psychotic drugs,
yep,
it's just unbelievable.
Well, they're calling this early intervention. and it's based on what a so-called kindling theory, which is that if you nip the problem in the bud early enough, it's not going to balloon into a problem later on. And as I said, there are just so many presumptions at every level of the thinking that is truly concerning. Yes, and at the same time, this is taking place by people who are well-meaning, who think they're doing the right thing, and who are attempting to eliminate suffering and say they're acting in the interests of the child, and the parents often comply because they think this is an expert, the expert knows what they're doing, and they should just heed the advice. And actually, my advice is seek a second opinion, seek a third opinion.
Yeah,
if you're giving that kind of advice about a 1 or 2 year old, it's really important that you get a different perspective. There are so many drug-free treatment options for children with learning difficulties, with behavioral difficulties. One of the problems here is that we default to medication so quickly because of the culture, because of the direct-to-consumer advertising that we see every day in the media. And the idea that there could be other options just doesn't really occur to us. And yet there are extremely practical alternatives that we really have to talk about and consider.
My guest is Christopher Lane of Northwestern University. His most recent book is Shyness, How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness. And Chris, part of the problems are twofold here that I'm thinking of as you're talking. Number one, efforts on the part of pharmaceutical companies and some physicians to turn everything into a disorder that requires a drug. And you document this so well in your book, Shyness. And it's also the fact that American medicine today is really marinated, is the only word I can think of. Just these students come out of medical school just dripping with this notion that you got to give them a drug, that everything is, you're just surrounded by disorders and sicknesses, and you got to, there's some drug out there that's the answer.
I mean, the there are so many different angles to this story that it's kind of hard to piece it all together. I mean, on the one hand, the doctors say they're responding to a public that is more educated about drugs and often doesn't want to leave an appointment with a doctor without some kind of prescription because they feel as if they've not received a full treatment. So the doctors feel as if they are responding to greater demand from the public. And there is a sense that to give a label to behavior that otherwise seems ambiguous or simply enigmatic is quite reassuring. And so I think the drug companies are very smart about this. They've found a way to imply that it's the best and the only option. But you're absolutely right. I mean, our medical communities are absolutely saturated with pharmaceuticals. And so many of the people who press for the diagnoses to be listed in the diagnostic manuals and so on, and for the addition of more and more criteria with each edition of the manual, are themselves consultants for sometimes dozens of pharmaceutical companies. So there is a very clear conflict of interest there, but again, it's not something that you often read about.
Right. And of course, this is we should point out that this is an American phenomenon. I mean, this doesn't really go on elsewhere in the world.
Well, that's one of Philip Daugherty's points, too. I mean, so I titled the interview, The Bipolar Child is an American Phenomenon, in part just to because it's a very startling quote that makes you think, oh, my God, you know, is it true that possibly this disorder simply does not occur in other countries? What does that say about our culture, about our society, indeed about the culture of American medicine and American psychiatry? He draws a comparison with the treatment options for children in France and Italy, and says, you know, instead of romanticizing this, we should actually be taking very seriously the fact that they don't recognize this problem. That's not retrograde on their part. It's actually understanding that there are different perspectives to behavioral problems, that they don't all need to be labeled in this way. And just to back that up, I mean, we talked about the 4,000% increase in diagnoses for juvenile bipolar disorder, for instance. Just a few years ago, the experts in bipolar disorder basically agreed that there was no such thing as pediatric or juvenile bipolar disorder. It simply did not exist. It was too complex a phenomenon for a child to exhibit. And actually, after Joseph Biedermann at Harvard, at Mass General, pressed for the recognition of the disorder among children, it just absolutely exploded. And one of the things that I asked Philip Daugherty about in the interview is whether the FDA black box warnings for antidepressants encouraged greater prescriptions for children of antipsychotics for the treatment of bipolar disorder. And he says there's no doubt about that. That this was one of the things that really drove up the number of diagnoses, was that a number of physicians just switched to antipsychotics on the presumption that they were safer to use on children, when in fact they hadn't been tested and they're less safe than antidepressants. So this is a loophole that I hope the FDA will close by becoming aware of the problem and recognizing that actually we have to stop this off-label prescription of these antipsychotics for children. It's simply too dangerous and too risky.
My guest is Professor Christopher Lane of Northwestern University. His most recent book is Shyness: How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness, and you can learn more online at christopherlane.org. Chris, let me ask you as well, as long as we're talking about ADD and ADHD and these meds that are prescribed for this, tell us about the use of these medicines by children and young adults who in school perhaps, who take these things unprescribed to study. I was talking with some folks during the break who said that, you know, when they were in high school, that it was very common to see kids snorting Ritalin or Adderall.
Oh my God! Well, there's certainly been a great deal of increased attention to this issue and its attendant problems. In the latest New Yorker, Margaret Talbot has a wonderful article on this, sort of weighing the two sides and basically acknowledging that a number of bioethicists have said neuroenhancement, which is what they're calling it, may not be in the main or in the abstract such a problem. On the other hand, she's saying that you have to focus on the side effects. You have to understand that Adderall and Ritalin and others are not free of associated problems. That first, these have been taken unprescribed, which is highly risky. You should also never snort these kind of medications too. That's extremely dangerous. And what, in fact, it says about us as a culture and the kind of stress that we're placing on students is something that I think bears out a great deal of discussion. Judith Warner in the New York Times has a blog that also, I think yesterday, addresses this problem and describes how she herself took Ritalin to meet a deadline and what the consequences were for her in doing so. Physiological consequences in terms of massive headaches and swollen feet and exhaustion and fatigue. So I think it's a big issue, and the fact that so many undergraduates in particular, maybe high school students, are trading these very dangerous medications on the presumption that they can take them without any risk, without side effects, has I think, got to be questioned. And I think we need to ask ourselves as a culture, you know, why the press for increased productivity at a time when people are already overstretched, already stressed out, this sense that you can eke out just a little bit more has, I think, got to be examined as well, because it's just cranking up the pressure that people are under, and I don't think that's a good thing at all.
Christopher Lane is my guest. His book is Shyness: how normal behavior became a sickness. We're honored to have him back on the program. Speaking of how normal behavior becomes a sickness, Chris, you also wrote recently at psychologytoday.com about efforts to turn internet use or internet overuse into a kind of mental disorder. What's going on there?
Well, 1 year ago, actually, almost to the day, the American Journal of Psychiatry published an editorial recommending that internet addiction disorder be listed in the next edition of the Diagnostic Manual. That's the DSM, or the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. This is the Bible of mental disorders that's invoked not just in this country, but really around the world. And Gerald Black, who wrote the editorial, said on the basis of one conference paper that between 20 and 24% of those with this affliction could even be hospitalized. I mean, that's how extreme they want to make it in order to justify listing it in the Diagnostic Manual. What they're talking about is the phenomenon, we all know it, of people who compulsively text, or they're kind of addicted to their Game Boy. They can't seem to get by without it, or they're endlessly checking their email. And what I wanted to do was simply discuss, again, the pressures that people are facing at the workforce, holding on to their jobs, the number of jobs and professions that rely on the internet and on email, publishing, from teaching, from all of these big corporations, and our own work culture and our work ethic, which is so fierce and so intent on, again, eking out greater forms of productivity, that the line between the obsessive dimension of it, which I recognize in myself, and the pathological element of it, of saying, up to a quarter of the people who are this obsessive should be hospitalized. I think it's that discrepancy that I wanted to touch upon, and to really discuss, why it is that in order to discuss a phenomenon like overusing the internet, we have to turn it into a disorder. We have to imply that it requires hospitalization, or at the very least, antidepressants, which is the other thing that he recommended. Whereas, in fact, if you look at countries like South Korea that recognize this problem, particularly among teenagers with excessive texting and gaming, all of their treatment options are to do with restoring greater interpersonal links between people, greater stress on humanity, greater enjoyment of sports and physical activity, greater pleasure and sociability. So the idea, again, that we have to turn to meds and we have to think about hospitalization really, in the end, says a lot more about our own medical and psychiatric culture than it does about the issue in question.
Yeah, and it also says a great deal, just last thoughts here, Chris, and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah.
It also says a great deal about the marketplace for these drugs. You have people researching and manufacturing these products that can then go to the government, in the case of vaccines, and lobby the government with untold amounts of money, unprecedented amounts of money that flows from pharmaceutical companies into campaigns and donations, and then get the government to require citizens to purchase their products.
Yeah. I mean, people have to know we do have more lobbyists for the drug companies than we have members of Congress. I mean, it's that stark and frightening. And what are those people doing full-time? I mean, they are exactly trying to influence campaigns, trying to influence policy. At the same time, they are pressing for greater mission creep, if you like, with these drugs, so that they start off by getting permission for a relatively small population, the really chronically afflicted that we can all basically agree upon. And then by whittling away and influencing, and they try to expand the parameters to such a point that more and more people fall into those nets and are said to be at risk of the problem.
And that's a good point we always want to make here when we talk about this. We have to recognize the fact that these meds have and do help many people.
They can do. Yes. For the truly chronically impaired, they can be the last resort. But I would nonetheless want to remind people of the number of alternative options, the drug-free treatment options that are out there, including talk therapy, including psychotherapy, And including forms of cognitive behavioral therapy that don't require medication.
Right, absolutely. And we certainly don't need to be giving these psychotic meds to infants.
Well, absolutely. We have to draw the line here and say, that, you know, as before, that this phenomenon has been misdiagnosed and that it's extremely risky to give these dangerous drugs to children whose brains and bodies are still developing when we have no capacity to predict that their behavioral traits are going to balloon later on in life into a full-blown disorder.
Absolutely. So for any parent out there, get a second opinion when a doctor says your baby needs psychotic meds.
Absolutely. And even for diagnoses of ADHD and bipolar disorder, these are serious diagnoses, and people should not simply accept the first perspective, because often those diagnoses are made after just a few minutes with your child. And you know more about the history, and you know as a parent more about the behavioral traits and the food that they're eating and the circumstances, the situations in which they overreact and where they underreact.
Absolutely.
But that has to be part of the treatment too.
Christopher Lane is a research professor at Northwestern University. You can check him out online at christopherlane.org. His most recent book is Shyness, How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness. Chris, it's always great to talk to you. Join us again, won't you?
Thanks so much, Coy. I'd be glad to.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.